Amen. Church, you can go ahead and have a seat. As you're doing so, how are we? I mean, come on. How are we not good with that much cuteness on stage? You know what I'm saying? And then to get to worship, I mean, it's just pretty special. Welcome to those of you in Paulden today who got breakfast. I saw the breakfast spread. Well done. Well played. It's always fun to see and know how you are gathering as community and how you are slowing down to see each other and break bread together. It's beautiful. We have something special happening. So my life group today is actually in Baghdad. So welcome Baghdad to you've been here the whole time, but welcome. We're glad you're there and hope you enjoy the life group fam there and some others from staff that made it out. We're excited to continue to build relationship, build community, to continue to build as a family and see God move there in Baghdad. We're excited for what the future is with Baghdad and what that looks like. Can you do me a favor? Because my wife is out there today. Can you just say hi to Baghdad this morning? And then to our online fam, welcome. We're glad you're with us. Glad we get to do this together. I love that we get to honor people. I love that part of our family values is just that we genuinely honor one another. We put one another first. And I love that this weekend is kind of set aside to specifically celebrate those that with their lives have chosen to sacrifice on behalf of other people. I have some people near and dear to me that have served within the military and some that are still serving within the military. And I love the gift that it is to everyone else. It's one of those, it's a really clear connection for me of you're willing to, and you are laying down your life that we can sit here and do this. It's a moment where we just get to honor and just say thank you. And so I would love to do that if you'll allow me. I know you'll hate it, but if you are an active military, you're in active military service, or you're someone who has been in military service, if you're a veteran, would you just stand so that we could honor you, please? Now, before you sit down, hang on. We know you got family that also sacrificed. So if you are family of them, would you stand? And we just want to say thanks. We are very, very grateful for your sacrifice and the way that you have served. So thank you. You can go ahead and have a seat. Paulden, Baghdad, I hope that you get to honor those that are there with you. Also, those of you online get to honor one another. So I want to take a moment just to celebrate with you, right? There's a certain person in my life who's pretty important to me. And that certain person happened to turn one yesterday. So here he is, just because you need to see him. Let's go. And not only did he turn one, but he got dedicated at Park Collective last night in Prescott Valley. Now what's fun with this is people ask, you know, so his first Halloween, like, what happened? What did he trunk or treat? Did you go trick or treating? Like, what did he dress up as? Well, I mean, you can see what he dressed up as. Clearly, he's just a model, right? Like, that's just what he is. And so here's what's interesting, though, right? Like, my role in his life is to let him know how valuable he is, how loved he is, how special he is, right? Like my job is to brag about him. This is what God created me to do, is to brag about him, right? And here's what's interesting. Now, if I was to go to him as he grows up, and I'm like, hey, Bex, okay, here you go. I'm going to give you the way to live life. Be as stingy as you possibly can. Don't give anybody anything, ever. You'd be like, you're the worst grandparent ever. What if I double down and I go, actually, Bex, you know what? Just make life all about you. Okay, don't think about anybody else. Don't think about your parents. Don't think about me. Don't think about anybody. Just think about you and make your whole life about you. Everybody in the room goes, that's a terrible idea. You'll end up what? Bitter, alone, hating life, trying to figure out what it's all about, probably have some kind of addictions because you can't keep up with trying to feed the monster that is you. Like we all know intuitively, right? Like, this is not the best way. Don't tell Bex that. Why? Because it's going to ruin him. Isn't it interesting that we know it intuitively? Right? Like, something inside us goes, that's not the best way to live. Don't tell your grandson that. That's not the best. And yet, how many of us are living for me? How many of us are living in a way that it's about what I amass and how I do it? How many of us are living, because if I tell him that, he's going to live a life much smaller than what he was created for. Like, we just intuitively know that this life was meant to be larger than us, and the way it is larger than us is we actually give it away to other people. How many people that end up in addiction, and there's just a train of people behind them that all suffered because of what? Their addiction. Because it was never meant to be about me and experiences and what I can get. It was about this idea that life is so much more. It's the abundant life that Jesus talked about. You know, it's interesting culturally what's around us. In 1860, Milton Bradley created a board game. So those of you that are board game enthusiasts, here you go. They created a board game, and it was called the Checkered Game of Life. And within that game, if you were to look at it, the original rules, the way that you win this game of life is you live to an old age, right? You get to a good old age, and that's a full life. You lived a full life. And so what the game would do, what the game would do is it would put you in situations where you had to make a choice, a moral choice of right and wrong, which way to go. And so it was built around virtue. It was built around this idea of you navigating through these tough moments so that you got to a point where you built this good old life. The way you would lose the game is you would end up in ruin, or you would end up disgraced. It's interesting that in 1960, they revamped that game. And if you've played the game of life, if you've ever played the board game, the game of life, anybody? Okay, all right, just making sure I'm not alone here. If you played that game, how do you win? Thank you. Wasn't that hard for this many people that have played that game. Maybe you know why you lost now, just saying. Yeah, it's the one that ends up with the most money. The one with the most money wins the game of life. Isn't that fascinating that culturally, 1860, which, by the way, you know why you have a spinner in that game? If you've ever played that game, you got that little spinner thing. You know why they did a spinner and not dice? Because dice were considered gambling in 1860. So you have a spinner. Information that doesn't matter. You didn't need it. But here's what's fascinating. Culturally, there was a shift, and the shift was the way you win at the game of life is you amass the most money. You retire at the millionaire, right? You don't go to Shady Acres. That's for losers, right? Isn't it interesting that culturally, if you took a shot of that, the culture you are born into, the culture you exist inside of, is how do you win at life? You are the one with the most at the end of this life that you've amassed for yourself. You know what's amazing? With Bex, there's a pressure on me to what? Provide for his future. Isn't that interesting that I can spend my whole life trying to amass stuff that at the end of my life, I'll leave behind? Like, that's just such a weird prospect. I don't think God intended for you to live your life going, I'm going to do everything in this life to provide that so it's easier for them. And because here's the thing, you don't know what they're going to do with it. But there is an idea that Jesus plants within the scriptures that this life is a generous life. And what I mean by that, one that's supposed to be bigger than you, one that's supposed to be given away, one that's not supposed to be about how much you can amass and what you do. In Luke chapter 11, We started last week walking through Luke chapter 10, 11, and 12. We're kind of anchoring there for the next few weeks. And the whole idea was Jesus has this thread of a theme that he puts all the way through, this idea of the generous life. If you were here last week, we talked about this idea of trusting God as the base of that, right? Like, you have to trust God. You will never live a generous life if your trust is not solely in God. So if your trust is in God, then the words of Jesus and what he says, then that becomes our base of how we're going to live. It becomes how we navigate. Because if I trust God, then Jesus being God, what he says, then I live out. And so there's this conversation that's happening. In verse 33, we're going to jump in the middle of some teachings by Jesus. It says this: no one lights a lamp and puts it in a place where it will be hidden, or under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand so that those who come in may see the light. Your eye is the lamp of your body. When your eyes are healthy, your whole body also is full of light. But when they are unhealthy, your body is also full of darkness. See to it then, be proactive then, that the light within you is not darkness. So there's something you can do about it, right? Therefore, if your whole body is full of light and no part of it dark, it will be just as full of light as when the lamp shines its light on you. No one lights a lamp and puts it in a place that's hidden. Right, think about the concept of lighting a lamp. If you light a lamp, you're lighting it with intentionality. Your plan is that you need a source of light for something, therefore you light a lamp. Why? So that it provides what it's supposed to as a source. And so in this context, it specifically says no one does that. No one intentionally goes and lights a lamp and then takes it to a place that is hidden. Now, that word hidden in the original has to do with like a cellar. That you don't light a lamp and then take it down into the cellar. The purpose in lighting the lamp is to put it on a stand. So there's intentionality. I light the lamp and I intentionally place the lamp. And when I place it on a stand, it says that what happens is that the house receives the light. Now, in that context, house, the term that's used there is actually household, the people. It's not the structure as we think of. It's the people of the house all receive a benefit from what? From the actions I have intentionally taken to put this light on a stand. It actually blesses everybody else. Everybody benefits from the light that was put on a stand. Jesus then switches, and he says in verse 34, your eye is the lamp of your body. When your eyes are healthy, your whole body is also full of light. So now he takes the comparison of a house and he goes, hey, your eye is essentially the lamp providing light to your entire body. If your eye is healthy, then your whole body is going to have light. Now, that word healthy in the original is really hard to translate and kind of for us to grasp. What's connected to it is this, that the idea of healthy is singular in focus. Okay, so if your eye is singular in focus, it's directed, then what's going to happen is your entire body is going to be healthy. So you can think of it this way, double vision, that I see multiple things, is a divided perspective of what I'm seeing. And so what he's saying is, instead of having double vision, have singular vision. Another layer to this word healthy is in Matthew chapter 26. Matthew's capturing the words of Jesus, and he connects with the same words that are here, that the idea of generosity, the idea of being generous to healthy, that the word healthy is translated generous. You could put it this way, that when I am singularly focused on this generous life that I was created for, my entire body will be healthy. Now, the picture he gives is what? That when I'm singularly focused and I'm on this generous life, it's like putting a lamp on a stand and the whole household benefits. When my life is singularly focused on the generous life that God intended for me, when I am living larger than myself, I'm living for for what God calls me to. I'm building his kingdom, not mine. I'm focused on Jesus and his mission. I'm focused on Jesus who lived the most generous life. When I'm singularly focused on him, what happens is it's like putting my life on a stand and everyone else around me benefits because of the generosity and because of this generous life. But he says when you have double vision, when you have divided attention, you become unhealthy. I don't know how you are, but true story from last week, I'm downtown Prescott, and I'm walking with a friend of mine, and we're walking along, and parked is this SUV Rolls Royce. And as we're going along, my friend goes, that's probably the most expensive car I've ever seen in Prescott. And for me, I did one of these. I'm going along, right? I'm focused. We've got a destination. And I start drooling all over the front of the car. So if it's your car, sorry for the drool stains. It's beautiful. You ever feel that way? Like, man, me and Jesus are good. I'm following Jesus. We're tight. And then all of a sudden, you're like, squirrel. Right? That's what he's talking about, this idea that we set out and we've got the generous life in front of us and we've got Jesus and he's our focus. And it's so easy to what? Become divided. To where now it's like, man, Jesus, I really, really love you, but it's a Rolls Royce. Jesus, I really, really love you, but man, this new job, I know it's not gonna allow me to go to church anymore. I know it's not gonna allow me to build community anymore. I know it's gonna make me really distant from people. I know it's gonna probably hurt my family. But man, did you see what they're offering? And all of a sudden, this life that Jesus is building, all of a sudden I'm divided and I end up over here. And so Jesus, in this, as this passage unpacks, verse 37, he gets done with the part we just read, and it says, when Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. If you were here last week, you know that when you recline at the table with somebody, you're building relationship, you're building community, you're building friendship, right? So Jesus is with this religious person, this Pharisee, who was known for how religious he was. Jesus goes to have a meal with him. And it says, but the Pharisee was surprised when he noticed that Jesus did not first wash before the meal. Okay, so culturally, what would happen within the meal is you would ritually wash yourself so that you were clean before eating. So it wasn't about hygiene. It was about doing the right thing from a religious perspective, that you had to cleanse yourself before stepping into that moment and eating. So Jesus comes along, who is a rabbi, who is a teacher, who should know the right thing. And what does Jesus do? He bypasses the washing station, to which the Pharisee, who is driven by doing the right thing, is now upset with Jesus, is now angry with Jesus, is now frustrated with Jesus because Jesus isn't doing what he wanted to do. Maybe, just maybe, what Jesus is getting at here is that when you are trying to live the generous life, be careful that you are not using religion and calling yourself generous. Right? Make sure that you're, when you're following Jesus, that what you are doing in the name of religion isn't substituting for your generosity that you should have within your soul. And so he's using religion so much so that Jesus says this then. Then the Lord said to him, now then, you Pharisees, you religious people, clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You foolish people, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But now, as for what is inside you, be generous to the poor, and everything will be clean for you. So here's the Pharisee. And the Pharisee is, I wash my hands because this is the right thing. Right? Like, I do this next because it is the right thing. I do this and this and this and this. And what the Pharisee is doing is amassing all of his right, is amassing for him this power and this prestige, right? He's becoming more and more like built up within the religious system, so to speak. And Jesus goes, hey, it's not about what you do on the outside that I'm interested in. I'm actually interested in what's on the inside. Why? Because he's using religion to attempt to get a life, right? Isn't it interesting that we can come to church and we feel like we're doing God a favor? Right, isn't it interesting that you can come to church and you feel like, oh, I did the right thing? And you gain a little higher status because you meet somebody in your week and they didn't go to church and you're like, sinner, I went to church. Oh, you may not say that. Oh, you went to life group, but that person hasn't been there for like 3 weeks? Oh, you don't know what giving is? Oh, I've been giving since 1960. Isn't it interesting that if we're not careful, what we do is the religious things, the things we do in God's name, can all of a sudden become a substitute for what's actually happening on the inside. You know you can give every single week and not be generous, right? Your generosity isn't geared by what you do from a religious standpoint. Your generosity is you can be here, you can give faithfully every single week, and you should. As your pastor, you should, okay? But you can do that and still miss the person in need that you pass every single day. Like, this is where we substitute religion, right? Like, we put religion in the place, and instead of it changing the inside, why? Because God is interested on the inside of you. And what we do when we get divided with religion, we put all these things that we should do that a good Christian would do, which, by the way, good Christian doesn't exist in the Bible. There are only Christians and there are not Christians, right? Like, that's all there is. And you can substitute all these things that are good and miss that what leads you to a generous life is I'm actually singularly focused on the person of Jesus Christ. You can come in here and you can worship. Right, you can come in here, you can sing the songs, you can even raise your hands. It does not mean that your heart is in love with Jesus. And notice what's happening here. The context is not financial. The context here is not financial. Even though it uses the word greed, guess what the word greed here in the original language is? It's to take aggressively by force. So what were the Pharisees taking aggressively by force? Prestige, status, position. The more religious they were, the more people looked up to them, the better they felt. They were essentially creating a platform for themselves to stand on so that they were higher than other people. And in the midst of that, Jesus goes, be careful, you're full of greed. Oh, you got all these actions on the outside, but inside, you're aggressively taking power, you're aggressively taking position, status for your own gain. That's what greed is, right? When I take it for my own gain. Notice what he says the solution is. Verse 41. But now, as for what is inside you, be generous to the poor. And we're like, oh, there it is. Give your money away. Money is not in this passage. He's talking about a greed that has to do with what? Position and status. And posturing and prestige. And he says, give it to the poor. Who are poor? Those that don't have what? Position and status. What is he saying? Give away what I've given you. If you have any status in the kingdom of God, it is because Jesus has given it to you. So give it away to somebody else. What you've been given in the person of Jesus, your job is to create a platform for them. Your job is to become less, not more. How do you become less? Because you're giving it all away. You're not trying to amass. You're not trying to gain. Instead, what you're doing is you're going, the generous life is about what I take that I've been given by God. In this context for the Pharisees, it's whatever power, whatever position, whatever prestige, whatever posture, whatever you have been given, give it away. give it away. Give it away. Give it away now. Okay. Chapter 12, verse 13. Jesus gives another example of this divided perspective. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to do it, to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." Guy comes to Jesus. He's like, "Hey, Jesus, you're a rabbi. That means you have some power, you have some prestige, you have some authority. I heard you're kind of like the Yoda of rabbis too, like you're not just a normal rabbi. So Jesus, here's what I want you to do. Jesus, I want you to tell my brother to give me my inheritance. Give me what's mine." Isn't it fascinating? The first people using religion, this person's using Jesus to get what he wants. He's coming and going, "Jesus, Jesus, you got to give me. You got to do this for me. Jesus, I'm here asking. I understand. I'm giving you the honor of being rabbi because I called you teacher. But what I really want you to do is I want you to do this over here for me. I'm not actually interested in you, Jesus. I'm just interested in the stuff." I don't know how you feel. I feel like it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to miss Jesus for the stuff. You know what I mean? "Oh, Jesus, I just really want this person to be healed. So, Jesus, I came to church." Jesus, I just really, 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 really need this job. And so, Jesus, I'm here and I'm worshiping you." No, you're not. You're worshiping the job. You're just using him as a means to get what you want. That's what this guy is doing. Like using Jesus to get his inheritance. And notice what Jesus says. "Watch out. Watch out." It's proactive, church. What do I know about your life? That if you do not stand guard, this idea is the next word he says is be on your guard, right? Like if you don't watch out, if you are not proactive, if you are not in the fight, so to speak, and you are not on guard like a soldier who stands at watch waiting for the enemy to show up. That's the language that Jesus gives here. What are you supposed to be on guard for? Because it's coming, right? Like the enemy is coming and you might as well like prepare for it is what he's saying. He goes, "Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." I read that and I went, wait a minute. All kinds of greed? What does that mean? I thought there was just one kind of greed. I thought it was just about possessions and wealth, right? Like I just thought it was about what I amass in this life. He says, "Be on your guard. Be like a soldier standing watch." What are you protecting from? All kinds of greed. Let me give you a couple of quick examples. You got somebody in your life that when it comes to the dishwasher, they know how to do the dishwasher. Somebody got it. By the elbows going, some other people got it. That's one of those moments like, "She's talking about you." You know what I mean, right? Like your dish only makes it as far as the kitchen sink. Because if you were to load that dishwasher, you're clearly going to do it wrong. There is a right way to load the dishwasher, and you don't know it. So what you are allowed to do is get it as far as the sink, and then it'll make it into the rest. I am happy to tell you that after many, 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 many years of marriage, I have been trained, apparently, to load the dishwasher. So things are looking up in my world. Yeah. Small victories, people. Small marital victories. No, but isn't it interesting that that's a microcosm of the idea of we love control? You ever notice that? And when he says all kinds of greed, guess what a form of greed is? That you are amassing control, that you continue to try and gain and gain and gain more control. I got news for you. You're not in control. He's in control. Right? So then what happens is some of you, you are spending your entire life to try and continue to work to make it to a platform, because when you get to that platform, nobody can tell you what to do. When you get to that point, you're your own boss. When you get to that point, you have power. And we continue to amass power. The only problem is, guess what? When you make it to the boss, you're not satisfied. Why? Because what's happened is you haven't stayed watch, and now you are amassing more and more and more power over people. It's amazing, right? Like, think about it with relationships. You ever watch somebody who is greedy with relationships? And they just, like, don't talk to them. They're mine. Really? And then they keep getting another one, and they're in their little circle, right? Like, they're just amassing relationships in their little circle where they're kind of the leader of their little clan. You ever notice that when you buy something, it's never enough? You ever notice that? Oh, if I just had those shoes, I'd never need another pair of shoes in my life. Till the new ones drop tomorrow. He says, be on your guard. Why? Against all kinds of greed. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Why? Life, and that word life is Zoe in the original. And Zoe has to do with the quality of life that you were created for and I was created for. It's the quality of life that inside of it, you have everything you will ever need. That you're completely at peace and at rest. He says, wait a minute, that kind of life does not consist. Tell him I said hi, whoever it is. Does not consist in an abundance. Okay, I'm awake because, and I don't mean to be mean, whoever's phone it was. This is important, you guys. This is the whole point of the whole message. You ready? Life, the abundant life that Jesus promised, does not consist, meaning it cannot be found. It can't be found. In an abundance of possessions. We know possessions is not just the things that are physical. It's all kinds of greed. And he goes, life cannot be found. So what I wanted to do this weekend is have a tombstone up here, a gravestone. And what I wanted to write on it was your name and your, that's harder to do than you would think. That your life is dead. When I am consumed with amassing more, that word abundance is to have an excessive, to have more than I need. So anything in your life that you are trying to amass, that you're trying to get, when you try to get more, when you become closed hand with it, it says that life can't be found there. You'll never find peace and joy. You'll never find hope. You'll never find love. Oh, I know you think he or she is really cute. You will not find by claiming and taking a relationship. You're not going to find life. It's not there. I know that vacation you think is going to set everything right and put you back and you're going to come back all zen. It's not going to do what you think it's going to do because it can't be found in those things. It can only be found in the singular focus in the person of Jesus, who lived the most generous life that anybody has ever lived. It can only be found in Jesus, right? And so the idea is that I have to be on guard. Why? Because all the culture around me is what? Trying to pull me to amass. And I have to go, no, I am going to be singularly focused on the person of Jesus. And when I do that, this is the promise. When you do that, you will find life. There's a whole thing on generations right now, on how this generation's doing this and this generation's doing that. I'll just speak for my own. My generation completely missed it. Because my generation was all about experiences. My generation was all about stability. My generation was all about pushing forward. And here's the thing, it is empty. And there are families that are proof that it was empty. Don't miss the opportunity to have the abundant life that Jesus promised by just simply fixing your eyes on him. Because where he'll lead you to see others. He'll lead you to be generous towards others. He'll will point you outward away from yourself. Remember the eye, and I'm done with this. Your life is supposed to be like a lamp. And what do you do with the lamp? You put it on a stand. And when it's healthy, when it's singularly focused, when your life is focused on Jesus, what happens? It blesses everyone where? Everyone in the room. Your life is designed to be a blessing. Do you see Jesus today? I don't know about you. I've done this 3 times now this weekend. And I just feel a strong sense of like, we just need to confess, you guys. Like, we just need to, I got it wrong. It was a Rolls Royce or whatever you fill in the blank with. I got it wrong. I was possessive of my time. I got it wrong. I was possessive of relationship. I got it, whatever it happens to be, whatever has distracted you, today's the day to go, no, I choose today to fix my eyes on Jesus. Because I don't know about you, like my grandson, I don't want him to live for something less than God intended. And the generous life is what you were created for in the person of Jesus. Would you pray with me? God, we just thank you today. Thank you for being our superhero today. God, thank you for being the hero that went to a cross and that sacrificed your life that we may find life. God, would you help us to not be distracted, to not be divided in our perception. God, would you show us areas where the life you intended for us, we're not living it because we are lost by all the things around us that we're trying to amass to find life in. And so God, we just take a moment to confess. God, we're sorry for the times when wealth has a bigger grip on our heart than it should. We're sorry for the times where just amassing and collecting an excess of things . God, we're sorry for the times when we take power and use it in a way that is more about us than serving. God, we confess the relationships that we use for our gain. God, we confess when we become selfish with our time. We confess the people that we pass by that are in need that we don't see. God, we confess when we don't have our eyes fixed on you. And so, God, in these next moments, would there be a turning as we worship? Would you turn us? Would you remind us that the goal of this life is that Christ would be magnified in us, that our lives can shine light to everyone around us? Would you set and fix our eyes on you? the God who has saved us, who has rescued us, who has died in our place. We just say thank you. That's in your name we pray.